From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio, focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us as we move on through the Lenten season and approach not only beginning of spring, but of course Easter Sunday and Holy Week coming up right at the end of the month, Easter Sunday, the 31st of March. And so we're approaching all these wonderful parts of our great Catholic faith. And we are pleased to welcome in Paul Starkey from the Society of St. Vincent de Paul. Thank you for joining us, Paul, in person.
My pleasure, Bob. I love it. It's been way too long. And speaking of Easter coming around the corner, holy smokes, it came quickly this year, right?
It did. I said to somebody in jest, God's got a sense of humor. He's got Ash Wednesday the same day as Valentine's Day.
Oh, yeah. No, that went over really well, didn't it, this year? Talk about your penance.
Yeah. No box of chocolates on that day.
Well, you know, it's so funny when the liturgical calendar moves like that in kind of a dramatic way. I mean, it all fits into the liturgical calendar and the system and everything, but it catches us off guard, just like daylight savings time.
Yep.
It happens every year, but every year we go, hey, how'd that happen?
Well, I remember waking up on Sunday morning and being reminded I even wrote about it about 2 days before in my newspaper column. And there I am Sunday morning and an hour behind.
Yeah, and it's really funny, too, because, again, with the season change and with Easter coming up so quickly, you kind of think, well, wait a minute, Easter can't be this early because, you know, we have to have the flowers and the grass and all that stuff. And then you look at this crazy weather we've had in Northern California, you know, and, like, one day it's winter and then, like, today was, you know.
Almost spring.
Almost spring, yeah, gorgeous. Yeah. And so I think we'll be just in time for Easter.
Yeah, I mean, I think of Easter as a, you know, going to Sunday morning mass, you know, and it's warm and everybody, you know, maybe you're dressed up a little bit, but you feel like you should be in shirt sleeves, and we could be completely bundled up and with umbrellas and, you know, maybe snow tires on the car.
Yeah, well, in some places probably
will be. Right. Yeah.
It's been a wild season, and to break the magic a little bit, I feel like we had a great conversation before this interview,
right.
And I was telling you then, I was surprised by St. Vincent de Paul and our disaster relief, because I always think of disaster relief being, well, what do we do? You know, it's like, you know, hurricanes, tornadoes, and Northern California fires, right? But one of our big disaster relief projects right now has been recovering from the 2023 winter storms.
Unbelievable.
So, yeah, it's just, you know.
And we weren't even the hardest hit. You know, the Central Coast was hit very hard.
Right.
And even Archdiocese of Los Angeles hit pretty darn hard.
But, you know, with these events like this, I mean, different parts of California, and again, even in Northern California, where some parts might be, you know, it was something to experience, but, you know, we've had worse kind of thing. There were parts of rural California that were really hit bad. So anyway, so St. Vincent de Paul is there for disaster relief. And like I said, that's why I regularly go to our website to remind myself of how busy we are. And we are very, very busy with the disaster relief. And then the Exodus Project, which is our transition program for people that are leaving institutions, prisons, coming in back into the community. That program is doing well, flourishing thanks to the many donations and all the work of the volunteers. And they have moved now into Solano, into that area. So now we have Sacramento and Solano. So, one of the many blessings to see is when you start small, that mustard seed, you know, that things expand. So.
Yeah, pull that mic just a little closer there, Paul, if you would. The interesting thing about the Exodus Project, I went to their dinner in the fall, I think it was, and they had a few of the people that have been in their program speak, and it was just amazing the transformation in their lives. You know, yeah. just getting out and having a friendly face and a voice and somebody who says, we can help you, you know, because and Bishop Soto told a story. He was at the dinner. He told a story at the dinner that when he was in Orange County, he had accompanied a woman who was going to pick up her husband who was mm-hmm. being released
yeah.
for some reason. And but he said, you know, we waited and waited and waited, and he, like 2 a.m, here he comes. And he found out that that was very common is when they would
release.
And that in waiting for him in the parking lot, they saw a number of men walk out of this facility into the night.
Right.
With probably a few dollars in their pocket that the state gave them and nothing else and nowhere to go. Nobody came to pick them up.
Right, and no plan for transition.
No plan at all. And right. how soon are they going to reoffend?
Yeah, I mean, the beauty of this program was, like many of the things with St. Vincent de Paul and all the wonderful Catholic Charities works that we do, you know, throughout the United States and the world, you know, people stand back and they look at something and they say, what can we do to make a difference? You know, seriously, like, what is God telling us to do with our hands, you know, to make this difference? And so it is a big problem about, you know, how to handle that transition from that, you know, being in the institutional life into the community. It's all about, you know, think about the Catholic values we have, the values of dignity and self-worth and families and being, you know, reunited to your family and everything, and the whole idea of community. All of those things are underneath the Exodus Project. Mm-hmm. It's just one example. And so, it's always amazing to me to see where something is going on for a long time and you know, we don't do anything, but then once we do, it is like a flashlight being shined in the darkness. You know, we're not doing anything. There's a problem. What can we do? And then people make intentional choices to make a small difference. And then from that small difference, it grows. It is like, you know, lighting candle after candle after candle, and pretty soon everything's illuminated. It's just, I don't know. With St. Vincent de Paul, I feel privileged to have seen this over and over and over again, you know. And we like to say in the society that we serve in hope, you know. And some of the situations we walk into, they do seem hopeless, you mm-hmm. know. And we, cathedral, for example, downtown Sacramento, ministers to the people on the
right,
streets.
Right.
And I can't think of a more hopeless feeling than, you know, that situation presents itself. But they go in there with hope to make a difference. And it is this miracle of the small difference, which then becomes a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
And again, and to me, that's where the miraculous part of this, you know, people say there aren't miracles anymore. I'm going, oh yeah, just look around.
Yeah.
You know, look around your neighborhood, look around your community. A lot of miracles are going on.
Yeah. So how did the Exodus Project and St. Vincent de Paul, how did that get born, if you will?
I want to go back to Bishop Soto because he is someone who, again, he looks at these situations from his experience, as you mentioned, in Orange County. He was aware of this situation. And in the society, in addition to Bishop Soto, we have had in different conferences, in different churches even, there have been what they would call jail ministry projects,
right?
And so it's just sort of this idea of like recognizing that need, recognizing that facet, that face of the poor, and then addressing it. But I really do want to give credit to Bishop Soto because I think that, you know, he was always there actually more than once telling me and telling others, what are you going to do, you know? And so we had this opportunity to do this. We found the right people. And this is interesting, too. And I think I know you've had him on your show, Rabbi Seth.
Oh, very many times, yeah.
This is someone who is inspired at this time to do this kind of work and has just done an amazing job. You know, so these things kind of come around. It's not linear with the work that we do. It just isn't. I, you know, I, when I, many, many years ago, when I was president of the council, I wanted everything to be A to Z, Bob. I wanted it to be linear, like we'll do step one, step two, step three. And I found out that apparently the Holy Spirit likes geometry. You know, the Holy Spirit, maybe the Holy Spirit does trigonometry. I don't even know. But it's above my mathematics level, because all the things that we have prayed for, they do come to fruition. You know, so that's why I go back to, you know, what are we facing today in society? What on the streets of Sacramento, on the streets South Lake Tahoe, up in Northern California, what are we looking at our communities, and then what can we do? You know, it's very fundamental, because as you and I have said many times, you know, we go to Matthew 25.
Right.
You know, it's pretty fundamental. You know, you feed the hungry. You know, you clothe the naked, you know, you visit those in prisons. And it's fundamental, but it's complicated. I mean, it you know, how do you do it? What's the best way to do it? And one of the things that I love about the Society of St. Vincent de Paul, and again, this is a Catholic Church notion, and, you know, you and I love these Latin big words.
Yes.
But, you know, this idea of, you know, subsidiarity, like, mm-hmm. you know, don't start in Washington, D.C.
Right.
You know, start, you know, in, you know, the back neighborhood of South Lake Tahoe, you know, or wherever you are. You know, if you're in Winters, start in Winters.
Right.
You know, and whatever's there, you know, answer that call. You know, and I think that has proved, again, miraculous. I'll never forget in Vallejo, I was trying to make plans. I'm always making plans. Like, we could do this, we could do this, we could do this. And then I found out that these Vincentians in Vallejo were at a laundromat, and they were paying to help people wash their clothes. Mm-hmm. And I said, "What? That's not in the rule book. Why would we do that?" And they explained to me, "Well, Paul, they have no clean clothes, and they don't have the money to do this, and so we offered this." That little thing turned into helping people get their clothes washed, feeding people, giving people resources, turned into its own wonderful charity for that place and that time.
Wow. So, you know, my wife, Shelley, has said many times, we have a laundromat a few blocks down the street in a little shopping center, and she said many times, when somebody comes up with, they've got some gift cards and they don't know what to do with them, or they've got tickets to the show, or they've got some, you know, and she says, go to the laundromat. Anything, anybody in there can use anything you want to give them.
Yeah.
And it's really true. I mean, you know, many, many, many people have the convenience of having a washer and dryer at home. And if you don't have a washer and dryer at home, you're much closer to the edge than a lot of people are on many, many other things.
Yeah, and I think that is, again, this very Vincentian thing about just working locally and, you know, looking around and saying, what can we do to help? And another key thing is the dignity of the people we help. The people that created that charity in the laundromat, they did it in response to the question, how can we help you?
Right.
So we didn't say, you know, this is what we're going to do, A, B, C, D. They said, how can we help you?
Right.
And out of that question, there was a discussion, and then out of that discussion, there was action. So and always a surprise to me, because I go, who would have thunk?
Yeah.
Who would have thunk that would be like the perfect thing to do?
Yeah, and so. Maybe for those people who haven't heard you previously here, go all the way back to Frederick Gozanam.
I will do that very quickly, because it is a beautiful story. Frederick Gozanam was a young man. He was 20 when he started the society, and this all came out. He was in Paris, France, at the Sorbonne. And back then, the boys, because there were no girls, you know, this was like, you know, a different time, different place. They would sit around and they would talk about history. They would have clubs that would talk about, and they would have debates and things like that. So, out of one of these clubs, you might even call them like kind of a fraternity, they, in Paris, France at the time, there was an anti-Catholic sentiment, very, very strong. And Frederick was Catholic, and he was challenged by others to say, you Catholics, you know, literally, you're all talk. Show us, you know, show us what you can do, right? So that hit Frederick and the men he was with, the young men, and they started this model, which we use to this day, over 150, more than 175 years ago, this model of the home visit. Mm-hmm. And the idea is you go out to the poor. Now, who said that recently? Oh, Pope Francis.
Yes.
Go figure. So Blessed Frederick and the young men of the university took their own time, their money, and they worked with a beautiful person, Blessed Rosalie Rondeau, a nun, mm-hmm. who knew how to do this. She is an amazing figure, Rosalie Rondeau, praying that both Frederick Ozanam and she become saints very, very soon, just very devoted lives. But out of that visit, this idea of a go to the poor, have this personal visit, and that's what they would do. And Blessed Frederick, his father was a doctor, and he saw his father literally climb up the stairs to visit people who were sick. And in that experience, as a boy and as a young man, he saw that, you know, that's the model. That's what you do. You go to the poor and you serve. So we do that today. Somebody will call the Society of St. Vincent de Paul for help, and we will, you know, ask them, you know, may we visit you at your home? And, you know, we find out before we go, you know, do you need food or what's the nature of how can we help you? And then we always go in at least, you know, pairs. Sometimes two or three of us will go, and we visit our neighbor in their home. And in that visit, we make this connection about neighbor to neighbor and helping one another. Is it efficient? Do we serve 4 billion hamburgers, you know, a year? Or, you know, I don't think it's efficient, Bob. Is it miraculous every single time? Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. I used to have an expression. We solve poverty, the Society of St. Vincent de Paul, we solve poverty one home visit at a time. Mm-hmm. Because that's what we do. Whether, no matter where we are throughout the United States, throughout the world, this same model, we go and we make the home visit. And out of that encounter, you know, we provide basic things like food. But there's a spirituality in what we do.
Oh, sure, there is, yeah.
And we even have an expression that in these home visits, in these personal encounters, again, the people from the cathedral, the Vincentians from the cathedral that go out on the streets, they have a personal face-to-face encounter. And one of our expressions is we look for the face of Christ in the poor. And it's a very profound thought because as Catholics, we know that Christ identified with the poor. And so when we are serving the poor, disheveled, dirty, maybe angry, maybe confused, you say, where is the face of Christ in this? You know, but just trust me from my own experience. It is, you will encounter Christ in these visits. And it is a very powerful thing. And that's why when people say, well, St. Vincent de Paul, you're just about thrift stores, right? It's like, yes, yes, we have a wonderful thrift store, 2275 Watt Avenue.
Right.
Make sure you go. It's so much more than that. And the thing is for Catholics, if you're looking for an opportunity to express your faith, to live your faith in a meaningful way, I would encourage you to go to your local, you know, go to your church. If you don't have a conference, start one. Because it's a powerful experience. And it's not easy. You know, but it is something that we have all found. Every single one of us, when we join the society, we always find that once we have started down that journey, it's one we're glad we took the first step. You know, but sometimes it's very hard to do that first step.
You know, you mentioned seeing the face of Christ, and my dad used to tell me that when we'd encounter people, you know, you got to try to see the face of Christ, even though he wasn't a Vincentian, and probably would have been, probably we didn't have it in our little community at the time, but it's right there where he's separating the goats from the sheep, and it's right there in the good book. When did we do this, or when did we not do this?
Yeah.
And Jesus says, every time you turned away from somebody in need, you didn't do it. And when you did help someone in need, you did it to me.
Yeah. You know, and in some ways for Catholics, that can be a real cross to bear. Mm-hmm. You know, like, have I done enough? Have I done what I need to do? But I always, you know, the way that I approach it is that it starts with our families. You know, I'll never forget, I had a conversation with a young couple. They came up to me after church and they said, oh, we want to be in the society, we want to do something, but we have our young kids and we just don't know how we're going to do this. And I said, you are doing right now your vocation. Mm. Those young kids are your vocation, you know. And, you know, when we have the bundle Sunday and the truck comes to the church parking lot, bring the kids.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Expose them to that. You know, if we do something that's an event that you can participate in, you know, we look forward to that. But this idea that it's all or nothing, it's like, no, it's like our Catholic vocation is our family and our marriage or our ministry if we're priests and nuns. And that's the primacy of it. I often tell folks that, you know, we talk about Vincentians, which is this odd term, which just simply means people that are members of the Society of St. Vincent de Paul, who was our patron saint of charity. So the society is named after St. Vincent de Paul. But as Vincentians, we're Catholics.
Right.
You know, every single thing we do is so Catholic. So if you're already a Catholic, you will find the Society of St. Vincent de Paul very comforting. Because, for example, if you're a Catholic, you probably know the Hail Mary.
Yeah.
You know? Well, the Hail Mary is said, it is sort of like it's like our standard prayer at every meeting. Because Blessed
Frederick. It's like your Pledge of Allegiance.
Blessed Frederick had a devotion to the Blessed Mary.
Sure.
And so, you know, that was part of the tradition, and it carries on today. All the Marian feast. I mean, if you want to eat, drink, and be hearty, I mean, we celebrate every Marian feast there is. You know,
it's about every other day on the calendar.
Yeah, and it's wonderful. But there's even our team colors, and I'm probably going to get disbarred from St. Vincent de Paul for talking about it this way, but we wear Marian blue, that light blue medium color that's associated with the Virgin Mary. And the reason for that, that's part of our devotion, you know. So so many beautiful things in our traditions. And then the other thing that I always like about it is again, the Catholic Church. It is one large family. So we have Vincentians, Catholics working in charity throughout the world. We have the Daughters of Charity. We have Vincentian priests. All of these different fraternities of Catholics that have come together under this umbrella of the Vincentian family. So it's got tradition, but at the same time, it's very modern. You know, we're on social media.
Why is it not called the Blessed Frederick Society?
Because Blessed Frederick. Again, we call him Blessed because he's in line for sainthood, so we're hoping for that. But Blessed Frederick and his group of young men, you know, they were saying, you know, who should be our patron? Who should be the patron of this organization? And they chose St. Vincent de Paul, who lived 500 years before. And the story of St. Vincent de Paul and also St. Louise de Marillac is... They're wonderful stories because they talk about people who, especially St. Vincent de Paul, was a stranger to poverty. His goal in becoming a priest, as the story goes, was to make money. Because back then, it was a good deal. You become a priest, you're gonna be associated with the people that have money and land and stuff like that. And the story goes, he was out on his rounds. And as a priest, and he out in the country, and he realizes that these people don't have a priest. They're poor. They're not getting confessions, and so he had this just change of heart, a conversion, you know. And so then he engaged in all the things that he did in terms of charity, and they were amazing things because he was the he would have been the first CEO of a major charitable foundation. And this is what people don't remember. We have charitable foundations because of the Catholic Church.
Oh, sure.
If you go back in history, you know, the Catholic Church was the one that was founding all of these charitable institutions and universities and all this stuff. So Vincent comes in, and he is a major organizer. And they had this, and he's associated with babies because people at that time would be leaving babies on the doorstep of the church, right? The foundlings, they were called. And so I guess Vincent would say he doesn't know nothing about birth of babies, but he knew who did. So he went to the women of the church and he said, look, you know, are you going to take care of this situation? You know, and I don't think it was a question, you know. So anyway, the bottom line is he and St. Louis de Marac were great at organizing charitable works. And we take that same principle in what we do today in the 21st century. We do want to be organized. We want to be efficient. And again, not in the sense of efficiency for efficiency's sake, but if you are involved in charity, serving the poor is incredibly complex. There's all kinds of reasons why people are poor. And so you don't have one size fits all,
right.
But you do have an approach that is going to walk with people out of poverty. You know, it's not just delivering a bag of food. It's you know, literally having an encounter and a journey and walking with them. So that takes an organization, which is what the society is.
When did it come to the United States? Through immigration primarily?
I believe it was another one of these miracles. If the society started, again, small group of university students, Paris, 1830, and I might have the wrong date, maybe 1833. It quickly spread, these conferences quickly spread throughout France and then Europe. By 1845, somebody who was aware of this in Europe had traveled back to St. Louis, Missouri. And so there was a connection there. They had seen this in Europe, and they said, you know, we can do this here. And St. Louis, Missouri today is the cap. It's the National Society is based in St. Louis, Missouri. Our president, Joe Alves, is back there right now for a mid-year meeting. It's amazing because I've been back there, and the church there has a plaque right there in the brick wall, and it talks about, you know, this was the first
specific church.
Yeah,
is it the cathedral or is it just a parish?
It's not the cathedral. It's at least I don't know that it designated the cathedral, but it's a separate church, and it's been there forever, and so. It's just exciting to, if anyone has ever been to Europe, you know this. I mean, you go to Italy, you know, and you walk from corner to corner in all these churches, you know, and you walk in these churches, and if you don't feel the history and the tradition and the beauty of the Catholic Church, you must be asleep, you know, because I mean, all the artwork and just the tradition and stuff is just amazing. Same thing I felt like, and St. Louis is not that old, but you know, same thing. I walked in that church and just, you could feel the beginning, which it was exciting. So, but this society and this organization, we do this because we have an annual dinner.
Yes.
And that's the bottom line. We have our 18th annual dinner for the poor. This is our major fundraiser for the Sacramento Council. And all of the monies we raise for this are going towards direct charity. So in other words, we raise this money through the charity dinner, and then it's dispersed throughout the districts, all throughout Northern California, and then to the individual conferences. So
this is your prime fundraiser.
This is the prime fundraiser. Another one that's really important, and I just want your listeners to just really know how important it is the annual Catholic Appeal.
Right.
The annual Catholic Appeal, I'm sure you've had some conversations about it. Just really, really important. And one of the things that's nice about it is that's a secondary source for us where we're able to, again, get direct charity money out to our conferences. So really want to support that every year. But our dinner is something that this is the 18th one. We do a couple things. One is we have a benefactor of the poor. And benefactor, a big word, but basically this is just like, you know, someone who has helped the society help the poor. And it's been various people and organizations throughout the years. This year's benefactor of the poor is the Clegg family. Mm-hmm. Colby and Annie Clegg are...
That's C-L-E-G-G, Clegg.
Yeah, C-L-E-G-G. They are what I call young Vincentians. Mm-hmm. Unlike me, a young couple, they got two young boys, beautiful Catholic family. But from the very beginning, when I personally met Colby and Annie, they were Vincentians in my local conference at Our Lady of Grace in West Sacramento. And they've since moved on and they're in a different part. But that was my first experience with them and was so impressed then with their dedication as a young couple to say, you know, and they both of them came out of that helping tradition, mm-hmm. you know, so they were part of our society and everything. And then they move on and they're having their family. And the next thing I know is Colby and his family are helping us at every turn. So I had sponsored a walk for the poor. We had some help there, which was very much appreciated. And for years, Colby and Annie had been sponsoring the Young Vincentian table mm-hmm. at the annual dinner. And the reason this is so important is because this allows us to bring in young people
sure.
who can see this and look at the video we put on and hear the speakers and everything. So that's just a really nice thing. And then one of the most recent things was they were generous enough to help us with, and I have to give a little background. After when COVID hit, just like every community group, St. Vincent de Paul was affected. And so since that time, we have been putting things back together. Some of the conferences didn't miss a beat. They kept on going, and they figured out ways to help the poor during the pandemic times. But some of them literally shut the doors. They weren't able to do anything. So we have spent time renovating, rejuvenating, whatever, I don't know what the word is, but reinvigorating, reviving.
Start with an R.
Yeah, get my thesaurus out. But bringing the conferences back to life, and so the Clegg family has helped with that. So we're very grateful for that. The other thing we do is we have a speaker, and this year's speaker is just wonderful, Deacon Gene Smith. And Deacon has been a longtime Vincentian, a wonderful man. He and his wife, Nina, are just amazing. And Gene was the national president in 1999 to 2005. And those were very, very formative years for the National Society. Mm-hmm. And so we're indebted to Gene and to Nina and for all their wonderful work and dedication. And he knows Sacramento, so that's why I'm so glad he's coming to be our speaker. He knows us. I think he loves us, Bob. So we're very happy to have him come on board.
So he lives in San Rafael.
Yes, yes. And so this event is April 26th, and it is, again, it's a charity dinner. So we have our information on our website, which is you can just Google St. Vincent de Paul Sacramento, and you'll find our website, and all the information is there. There's multiple ways to participate. One, we would encourage all Vincentians and all Catholics and everyone who wants to come to the dinner, you know, to come and see this dinner. It's an opportunity for us to share with the community all the things that we do. And so it's always a very moving night and enjoyable.
I can attest to that.
Yes, you can.
It's a very enjoyable night, especially when Walt Gray gives Joe Elves the hook.
Well, we have a lot of traditions that we work on. But the other thing is that this is an opportunity that businesses can sponsor this dinner. And the reason I mention that is another opportunity because mm-hmm. if a business or a group is looking for a way to do something very meaningful with their donation, I would say this is a good event, because by being a dinner sponsor, again, you know, we're bringing in those funds that go towards our direct charity throughout the Sacramento diocese.
And there are five different levels of dinner sponsors.
We always have our levels, and yes. Ours are, I think, they're liturgically based, aren't they?
Names? Yes, they are. Yes, they are. Let's see. Yes, indeed, they are. And we'll throw in all the perks they get. How about a guest shot on the Bishop's Hour?
For a sponsor.
If
they want to be a sponsor and you'll have them,
we'll have them.
That sounds like great.
Yeah,
that would be wonderful. You know, people. My experience is that first of all, the Catholic parishes, the people in the Catholic pews are incredibly generous. They always have been. They continue to be, and everybody recognizes, you know, the need is there. The need is real. And so it's like, again, you know, what can I do looking in my community? What can I do to help? This is a tangible thing people can do. You know, they can either attend this dinner or sponsor the dinner, or find other ways to donate to the works of the society. One of the things that always cracks me up, Bob, is that we will take your car. I don't know that we have a house program yet, but we have this car donation program that does not have an obnoxious commercial associated with it.
You know, don't get me started.
if you open up the Catholic Herald, and I hope you are, you know, either online or do we have any paper left on the Catholic Herald? Everything's so modern.
It's all magazine now.
Okay.
But it's online as well.
Yeah. So you go online and you will find our ad for this car donation. And lo and behold, people donate their car to St. Vincent de Paul. And it's...
How does that work? And then it goes to in most cases, they're not in great working order.
Whatever condition they're in, these cars are donated, and the society has contracted with a group that goes in. They pick up the car, and there's a value to that, and the society receives that, and it's a donation for the donor, and they get the car out of the garage, and it's a win-win for everybody.
Out of the driveway where it's leaking oil.
But I always laugh about it, because it's like, you know, I never thought of, like, you know, giving a car, you know, to help the poor. But yes, that's a very good thing to do, so... We always talk about that, and of course I've mentioned our thrift store. It's the thrift store is just it's a threefer, not just a twofer, but a threefer, because the thrift store allows people to donate their goods. We in turn at the thrift store we sell those goods, and people, thrift store shoppers, they come in, and that money is then used for charity, and it's also used for our administrative costs, which are very important. So it helps the council stay afloat. But the other thing is that we do charity out of the store. So for example, our conferences can, working with the people that they're serving, get them vouchers to get material that was donated to the store. So it helps the store directly with a monetary donation. Then it helps the people that may have a need that we can give them resources. And then the third thing is that I think it is a valuable witness for Catholics to say, you know, that's our store. You know, when we donate, you know, we donate to them. Right. Now, I used to joke about this, but I kind of got in trouble for it. I used to say that it was if you didn't know about the thrift store and you donated to another organization, it was a venial sin. But if you knew about the Catholic St. Vincent de Paul thrift store, it was a much grievous error.
I can see you got in trouble for that.
But yeah, I was told to stay on the theological line of what's good and what's not.
So I was thinking, you know, of the various levels of sponsorship. One that's very tangible in people's mind is to be a table sponsor.
Yes.
Where you're actually, probably eight people at the table, or maybe 10?
I think we have 10 at the
table. 10 at the table, and you've made it possible for those people to come.
Right. So you, by your donation, by getting that table, one, you're going to have a good time, because hopefully you're going to attend as well.
Yeah.
But you may be exposing, you know, your friends, your colleagues, your associates to the work of what we do, which is just excellent. And it is really a nice thing, and of course, you know, there's with that kind of sponsorship, there's recognition, you know. So for, like, you know, any business, law firms, accountancy firms, You know, it's just a great opportunity to say, hey, you know, we made our mark here.
Right.
This is what we did with that. And we love to see it. This is at the DoubleTree, which is a very nice venue.
Yeah, they really roll out the red carpet for this. They really do. It's spectacular.
It's a nice venue, and the only thing I would say for the sponsors is get in now because we have a limited number of tables.
Right.
It's not like a virtual deal. It's like it's real in person.
Well, you can't add tables. There's no more space.
No.
You may have to go to Golden One next time.
Yeah, and I'll get in trouble for this too, but we always leave space for the bar.
Right.
So there's a bar there, and we have that set up. The other thing is if you do come to the dinner, please bring an extra $20 or $40 because there's going to be these wonderful young people that will be probably dressed in Hawaiian garb, and they will be hawking raffle tickets.
Aggressively. Yes.
And lovely, too, by
lovely,
the way.
Yes.
The Christian Brothers guys, we have to kind of pull them back a little bit. But for the most part, it's all good. But no, these kids, they're just great. They come out and they help us that night. And but this Hawaiian raffle, we call it the Hawaiian raffle because it is a Hawaiian a trip to Hawaii.
Right. And really, fairly inclusive.
It's fairly inclusive, and it gets you over there. It gives you a rental car, and it's a complete package. And I know that it's real, but I've never won. So I can't say for sure, but I mean.
Well, we had Joe Elves in here last year prior to the dinner.
Yeah.
And he promised me I would win on the air.
Well.
And I didn't. But maybe it's in my future.
No, I think what Joe said was that you have a winning ticket, which means that you could win, Bob. You could win. You know, I'll tell you what's funny. You know, they talk about lightning striking twice. We did have. We've only been doing this for.
You had a double win, yeah.
We had a person who won
twice,
and I think at that point we had only done this raffle like maybe six times, and like we're all shaking our heads saying that is not fair.
That's not fair.
That is
maybe they bought 1,000 tickets or something. Maybe they actually had a decent chance of winning it.
Well, yeah, one ticket is probably not going to give me that much. So, but anyway.
That's, you know, you're right. The people selling them they're a lot of fun.
Yeah. The whole event is wonderful. And the other thing too, that I like about this particular dinner, we make it a point to keep it short. And so, you know, you mentioned the hook. Yeah. We actually, you know, Walt Gray will yank us off the stage. They don't even let me talk anymore. So you can see why. It's a concise program. It's short, it's beautiful, it's moving. We'll have a video of spotlighting something that we're doing. You know, the thing that I really like about it, though, it's not a bunch of noise. You actually have a chance.
Oh, yeah.
Like if you buy a table and bring your colleagues, your work associates, you'll have an opportunity to have a good night with them.
Yeah.
You know, sitting around, have a chance to talk and stuff. And so it's a very nice night. It's a Friday evening, April 26th.
You'll meet Bishop Soto.
Yes.
Bishop always, you know, I've noticed Bishop Soto at many of these different events, and he makes a point of going around every table. You know, it doesn't matter. He'll find the time, not all at once, you know, because there's so many tables, but he'll do it beforehand. You do it when dessert's coming out, I remember at one vocations dinner, he's out passing the cookies from table to table, you know, because he really wants to meet the people.
He does, and the other thing is, and I've said this before, I'm just so grateful to Bishop Soto because it is so important that your bishop will support the work that you're doing. And from the beginning, the very beginning, Bishop Soto has always supported our work.
Right.
And again, like I said, he's not only supported our work, I know personally he's nudged us. You know, he's saying, you know, I would like to see this, you know, and it's just that kind of partnership is just amazing. It's just so good.
I should add about the dinner. It's not your basic rubber chicken dinner. It is really good food.
Your fingers crossed. It has been for 18 years. Yeah. So I don't see why we should change that now. But yeah, it's a good dinner, good company.
Can people buy the raffle tickets online? I know sometimes you're selling them after Mass at certain parishes.
Yeah. Hopefully throughout the diocese, you'll be able to get those through your local parish. We don't have a program where we do that online, but the night of the dinner, for example, and we'll sell them during the dinner, before the dinner, before the final draw. And also, as part of that, there are raffle baskets too. So right. I don't know what it is. We don't have time to play bingo, I say. So, you know, the best we can do is a raffle. But we make it fun because we have these raffle gifts, and then we have the big raffle draw and everything, and that's at the end. But before then, any Vincentian, you know, you just get a hold of them, and they will have raffle tickets.
Yeah.
So, and if you can't find a Vincentian, just call the Sacramento office.
What are they, $10?
$10, and like I said, every ticket is a winning ticket. not that it will win, but that it has the potential to win.
Need not be present to win, but we hope you're present.
Oh yeah, that would be just fantastic.
And you're not going to, you know, I've been to a lot of events, and I know you have, and they always have an auction after everything,
right?
And people start leaving. People start leaving. And by you say, if you're going to have an auction, do it first. Because it gets too long and it gets too late.
Yeah, and that's the beauty of the raffle baskets. I mean, it really is the focus.
It's quick
of this,
and easy and clean.
It's a fun thing. I think the raffle basket is called Drinking with the Saints. Mm-hmm. And this is one that's put together that every year. And it's just hilarious because it's got some nice selections of appropriate drinks that saints might have and holy cards and other things like that. It's a hoot and other things like that. But it is fun because the focus of this dinner is really the focus of our society. It's believe it or not, spirituality. There's a spiritual element to it, definitely the fellowship, and then the opportunity, you know, for charity and stuff. So it's just kind of a nice way to bring that all together.
Paul, I know we've kept you over time here, but very quickly, thank you. You've have a new executive director. That's big stuff. That's new stuff.
Yeah, I want to say this to Society of St. Vincent de Paul because of the generosity of everybody supporting us over the years. We were able to hire Denise O'Brien. She's our executive director. She has helped us become the Sacramento Diocesan Council. We truly have a presence, continuity, stability, and you'll be hearing more from the Society of St. Vincent de Paul because we're going to have, you know, focused campaigns to let people know what we're doing. Because people, like I say, it's almost a joke. It's like, well, St. Vincent de Paul, that's a thrift store. It's like, no, it's so much more than that. So we're so happy to have Denise, and just looking for the future ahead. We have conferences growing, Holy Trinity in El Dorado, St. Ignatius now in Sacramento. So again, if you think this is something that's not in your local church, in your parish, you would like this, let us know and we will help you get that set up.
Very good. A phone number, a website?
I always go to the website. The website, again, the easiest thing is just St. Vincent de Paul Society, Sacramento. You're either going to hit the thrift store or you're going to hit us. And either one works out fine. It has a horrible computer address.
Yes, it does.
But I'm going to do it anyway. It's www. Does anyone even do that?
No, you don't have to do that.
Yeah. SVDP, SVDP, St. Vincent de Paul, hyphen.
Yeah, not a dash.
Not a dash. SVDP-sacramento.org. I would encourage everyone to open that up and just be pleasantly surprised about the beautiful things that the Society and the Catholic Church are doing in Northern California.
Very good. Paul, blessings to you and all the Vincentians, and thanks for taking the time with us today.
Thank you so much for the time. I appreciate it.
Absolutely a joy. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. I want to take a minute to talk about the annual Catholic Appeal, the 2024 annual Catholic Appeal. So important here in the Diocese of Sacramento. So many ministries supported by the annual Catholic Appeal, and the people in the Diocese of Sacramento have always been so generous, but a wonderful brochure, a pamphlet, really, that you may have received in the mail. And on the back cover, a picture, maybe it's front, I guess that's the front cover, Deacon Kevin Staskow says, I really think that everyone has something to give. When Jesus was literally dying on the cross, he found the strength to turn to the thief being crucified next to him and minister to that person. So often we have all kinds of excuses not to reach out to those next to us. Indeed, today you will be with me in paradise. And you look through this brochure and you will learn the many, many, many ministries that are supported by the annual Catholic Appeal. And 25% of your donation goes back to the parishes for social ministry at your parish. 50% supports charities, Catholic Charities of Sacramento, and the members in that are Catholic Charities of Yolo Solano, Northern Valley Catholic Social Service, which serves Butte, Glen, Shasta, Siskiyou, Tehama, and Trinity counties in this 20-county diocese, and Sacramento Food Bank and Family Services right here in the greater Sacramento area. Also, associate members are Camp Recreation, serving Northern California, the Mother Teresa Maternity Home in Placerville, the Rancho Cordova Food Locker in Greater Sacramento, the Upper Room Dining Hall in Placerville. Many of you have worked at those places, are very familiar with those places, or have availed yourself of the wonderful services they provide. 25% supports education, seminary and formation, and Catholic school tuition assistance. Partners the annual Catholic Appeal and Catholic Charities of Sacramento include Anderson Cottonwood Christian Assistance, Bishop Gallegos Maternity Home right here in Sacramento that does such wonderful work, the Catholic Ladies Relief Society up in Chico, Community Assistance Network in Greenville, Portola, and Quincy up in the hills, Loaves and Fishes in Sacramento, which just does wonderful work with the homeless, Sacramento Life Center, which has saved so many lives here in the Sacramento area, Salvation Army Food Shelf in Susanville, the Society of St. Vincent de Paul and their seven district councils, the North State, Placer, Yuba, Sutter, Butte, Sacramento East, South Sacramento, Elk Grove, Sacramento Metro Area, and Yolo Delta and Solano. Also, the Stanford Settlement Neighborhood Center in Sacramento and the Wellsprings Women's Center in Sacramento, plus Yuba City, Yuba Sutter, Right to Life, the two counties just north of Sacramento. More than 100 programs provide things like counseling, emergency fund, shelter and clothing, permanent and transitional housing, job training, pregnancy counseling, post and prenatal care, independent living skills, mentoring, parenting skills, after-school care, refugee resettlement, citizenship and immigration services, and jail ministry. Our gifts help people who are mentally ill, homeless, disaster survivors, immigrants, elderly, developmentally disabled, incarcerated, working families, refugees, at-risk youth, the unborn, pregnant women, the hungry, and single parents. Such a wide, wide range of our Catholic mission here on this earth and in this diocese of Sacramento. One of the programs through Northern Valley Catholic Social Services is the Court of Appointed Special Advocate Program, which is operated out of all the superior courts in the state of California. And it partners with Northern Valley Catholic Social Service to help kids who need advocates in the courts. They talk about, in this pamphlet, a young woman named Isabel, who is devoted to ensuring a positive support system for foster kids now and for their future. As a court-appointed special advocate, a program administered with compassion and dedication by Northern Valley Catholic Social Service, Isabel gives kids the voice they need in court to have a positive path in life. She was once in foster care herself. The severe trauma a child goes through is all too familiar. Today, she's reunited with her parents, has a family of her own, and is focused on becoming a lawyer. Northern Valley Catholic Social Services gives her the opportunity to advocate in court for children with stories like hers. Again, the annual Catholic Appeal, give generously, give whatever you can, whether it's a small amount, a large amount. Also, more men can say yes to the call to the priesthood. Support from the annual Catholic Appeal helps seminarian Eric Patrick, who is pictured in this brochure, to become Father Eric Patrick this past June. We've had him on our program, a delightful priest. Father Patrick is earnestly hopeful that he can be a conduit for the experience of God's mercy and love. With costs offset by the appeal, the 12 men now in seminarian formation can focus less on financial worries and more on preparing to serve in our parishes. The annual Catholic Appeal, a wonderful, wonderful way to support so many ministries in the Diocese of Sacramento. That's going to do it for us for today. Thanks for listening. God bless everyone.
We stand and lift up our hands, for the joy of the Lord is our strength. We bow down and worship Him now. How great, how awesome is He!